47. N Street. There were ghosts in the Civil War trees, past Philadelphia. Earlier, the track had passed near streets of tiny row houses in neighborhoods where poverty seemed to have been as efficient as the neutron bomb was said to be, streets as denuded of population as their windows were of glass. The houses themselves seemed to belong less to another time than to another country. Belfast, perhaps, after some sectarian biological attack. The shells of Japanese cars in the streets, belly down on bare rims. But past Philadelphia, and after taking another tablet, Milgram began to catch glimpses of spectral others, angels, perhaps. The late afternoon sun dressed the passing woods with Maxfield Parish foxfire, and perhaps it was that epileptic flicker generated by the train's motion that called these beings forth. He found them neutral, if not actually benign. They belonged to this landscape, this hour and time of year, and not to his story. Across the Metroliner's aisle, Brown tapped steadily on his armored laptop. An anxiety stole into Brown's face when he wrote, Milgram knew, and he saw it again now. Perhaps Brown was uncertain of his writing abilities, or habitually prepared to have what he wrote rejected or criticized excessively by whoever it was to whom he wrote. Or was it that he was simply uncomfortable with reporting a lack of success? As far as Milgram knew, Brown had never been successful at what he had seemed to be trying to do with the IF and the subject. Capturing the subject seemed to have been a win position for Brown, and Brown had tried, but hadn't managed it. Seizing whatever it was the IF delivered to the subject had seemed to be another, though secondary, win position, and possibly Brown had succeeded in that today in Union Square. Capturing the IF had never seemed like a win position. Had they captured the IF, Milgram assumed, both subject and the IF's extended family would be alerted to Brown's game. The planting of the signal grabber in the IF's room would have been negated. So, Milgram assumed what Brown was doing now was drafting his report of what had happened in Union Square. But he thought it unlikely that any such report would mention him or Dennis's black associates, and that was probably a very good thing. He was concerned that Brown had not yet mentioned to him the fact of his having been discovered no longer cuffed to the bench, but he felt prepared. The cuff itself had failed, and Milgram, sensing trouble in the park, had taken it upon himself to return to Brown's car, the better to facilitate their departure. Tiring of the flicking of sun through the trees, he thought he might read his book. But putting his hand on the worn cover, in the side pocket of the Paul Stewart, was as far as he got. He fell asleep, then, with his cheek against the warm glass, and only woke as Brown was shaking him as they pulled into Union Station in Washington. He found he was horribly stiff now, no doubt from his uncharacteristic bout of exercise in the park, as well as from the burst of fear-driven adrenaline that had made it possible. His legs felt like stilts as he staggered upright, brushing at crumbs from the turkey sandwich he'd had before Philadelphia. "Move," Brown ordered, pushing him ahead. Brown had his laptop and his bag slung at his hips, packhorse style, straps crossing his chest. Milgram suspected Brown had been taught this at some point in a course on optimally securing one's hand luggage. He had the sense that Brown improvised relatively little and never with much of a sense of ease. He was a man who believed there were ways to do things and that those were the ways things should be done. He was also, Milgram thought, struggling to keep up with them along the platform, an authoritarian, but with what Milgram assumed would be a fundamental need to obey orders. The Beaux-Arts triumphalism of the station made Milgram feel suddenly very small. His neck shrank into the collar of the Paul Stewart coat. He seemed to see himself and Brown from high up in those ornate arches, the two of them like beetles far below, trundling across a vast expanse of marble. He forced himself to peer up from between his shoulders at inscribed stone, allegorical sculpture, gilt, all the pomp and gravitas of another young century's American Renaissance.